You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome. Join our regular team and maybe a few special guests as they give you the lowdown on movies, TV shows, games, or just whatever they want to talk about. It's the best of geek from week to week, live on Twitch and direct in your ears via the podcast.
You don't know what you're saying.
What brings you down then?
I'm studying London College of Fashion.
Room is on the top floor.
It's perfect. I love it. If I could live any place in any time, I'd live here, in London, in the 60s. Last night, I saw something in my dreams. A girl.
And you are?
Sandy.
I got this kind of gift. I can see people, places, things others can't.
This is the closest most people ever get to their dreams.
They're not just dreams.
Jack, I don't want to do this.
You think you can just walk away?
It really happened.
What did you see?
Do you believe in ghosts?
I want to report a murder.
You witnessed the murder last night, but you believe this was a vision from the past.
The guy that killed her is still out there. I have to stop him.
Where are you going?
I know what you did.
I've done a lot of things. You're gonna have to be more specific, love.
You can't save me.
Well, there you are, and welcome one and all to the Periodic Table of Awesome.
Hi.
Na 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 na.
Love a bit of the swinging 60s.
Groovy, baby, yeah. I've got to say, I feel like the one who's really letting the side down in terms of great hair tonight.
Should have done something with that beard.
I don't know how to turn my beard into a beehive, but I'm more than willing to try. So hello, I'm Quinny. Who are you guys? I realize we haven't done this in a very long time.
Yeah, well, our names are kind of on the screen, but again, If people are just listening, I'm Jill.
I'm Peter.
Yay. Now, Peter is having a fun time with her tech tonight.
If I switch to the chat on my phone, I can see what you guys are saying, but then I can't see Jill and Quinny, so I have to decide whether to engage with the people that I'm talking to on here or engage with you lovely people in the chat.
Well, the good thing is, no matter what, you look amazing. You both do. And you both look like groovy, swinging, sexy kittens from the 60s, baby. Yeah. Sorry, is that inappropriate?
Last week has really paid off for this costuming decision that I've now made to just have a fringe that's long.
This was not like predetermined, this hairdo. I just woke up and thought, like, now that I've got this color, I feel like I need to do stuff with my hair, otherwise I'm just like letting the team down on weird crazy hair color people. But this is very 40s. It's not where we're at, but you know
fair, but also
I want to look
cool.
Nice for everybody that watches us.
Yeah. And which is why I too am just wearing a red shirt, because that's all I had. But also, just before we went on, I was wearing a singlet so I could eat the pasta that I was eating without any danger of getting pasta down my front, because I care about the presentation that we give to you guys.
See, we've all made an effort.
We have. We really have.
I don't know about made an effort. I think that's a stretch for what I've done, but, you know, we'll go with it. So a bit of background on this one. So we were going to be looking at foundation, which is, of course, a makeup that people wear.
Yeah, we made that gag last week.
Did we? Oh, yeah. Shit. Oh, wow. So I'm going to make the same jokes that I made last week, and I'm going to repeat myself multiple times. Yeah,
nice.
Which is anyone who knows me.
You'll have another opportunity to make that joke when we actually talk about foundation.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm so
which
glad.
Which is a makeup.
Yes.
That you put on your face.
See, comedy is funnier when you repeat it. Yeah. Also, comedy is funnier when you repeat it. Anyway, so we decided against doing that one because it was something that Dion had actually chosen, and Dion continues to be a very, very busy boy in the throes of editing something very big and very serious. And so as such, we have decided to put a pin in that and watch something a little different. Now, rule of three, comedy is funnier if you repeat it. There, now I've done three, everybody's
even the
fine.
Third time, yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yep. What's your experience of all things Edgar Wright?
Shaun of the Dead.
Yes.
Definitely my introduction.
Okay.
Hot Fuzz I loved. Not so much World's End. I felt like that was a bit of a letdown to the trilogy, sadly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the hardest one of the trilogy, that's for sure.
Yeah. Love, love, love Baby Driver. Even though it's got He Who Shall Not Be Named in it, it was still a great movie.
I wasn't aware Voldemort was in that, but I know what you mean.
Once you've had a sexual harassment strike against you, you never get named again. So
right. Okay. Then we'll just give that person some space.
see what you did there.
I'm fundy. Okay. Yeah. Pete, what about you? Where are you at with Edgar Wright?
Who doesn't love Edgar Wright? Like, his stuff is just so stylish and such a joy to watch usually. I don't know. Scott Pilgrim versus the World is like,
oh shit, I forgot about that.
One of the earlier ones that I watched. And yeah, obviously like Cornetto trilogy stuff. And I did really enjoy Baby Driver. Like, even though I usually hate that kind of violence, just again, it's just so stylish and musical in its, you know, editing. And I'm pretty excited whenever a new Edgar Wright movie comes out, even though this one isn't exactly my style.
I was going to say, this is a little bit different from perhaps your usual taste in films, and perhaps a little more up your alley, Jill.
Yeah. I'm not sure I even saw a trailer before I watched the movie. I'd seen, like, posters, images of it.
Right.
And knew that it was an Edgar Wright film. And I thought, why not? I'll go and watch it. Yeah, why the hell not? And then was very pleasantly surprised about a third of the way through the film where I'm like, oh, hang on, this has got some horror going on. I'm digging this.
I was actually surprised at how much horror there was. Like, I mean, because Edgar Wright he's usually more comedy, a bit of comedy horror occasionally, you know, and the Cornetto trilogy at different points in time all kind of pushes into the horror genre a little bit. Yeah. But I wouldn't have said that he really kind of, you know, digs in, whereas this one he's kind of like diving in both feet and going, yeah, righto, let's go.
I quite like that he has a distinctive aesthetic to his directing style, but can cross different genres. And I think, you know, trying something different is always, you know, going to freshen up the identity a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's always the danger with being known for a particular style of film that you're going to be pigeonholed into it forever, you know, and if that is Cornetto trilogy or if that is, you know, that kind of funny, wry, very clever stuff. Even Baby Driver still has a sort of comedic element and a real kind of, I don't know, it feels very Edgar Wright-y.
Yeah.
I guess there is a danger that you're always going to be stuck doing the same thing because everyone's just going, oh, do what you do. Do that thing that you do.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between that and someone like Wes Anderson where, like, you'll go and see a Wes film and you're like, okay, he has a very distinct style and he never strays from that. But, I mean, it works for some people, I feel like. You know what you're going to get. And I think with Edgar's directing style, it's very much, it's not just the wry, witty humor in the films, it's the fast editing and the quick pace and the really snappy cuts and music and stuff that is part of his style. And that's very much in this film.
Yeah, absolutely. Pete, which of his films did you kind of like, do you dig the most?
That's a question.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember loving Shaun of the Dead when I first saw it because one of my favourite things in the world is when genres reach their comedy mark, you know, and to go comedy, parody, zombie, horror was brilliant and I loved it and I'll never listen to that Queen song in the same way ever again.
Don't stop me now.
Don't Stop Me Now is one of my favourite Queen songs and every time I listen to it, it's just...
I'm having a good time, having a good time.
So that would be the one that kind of sticks out only because it was just such a... I just remember it being such a terrifically fun watch when I first watched it. I feel like I maybe even saw Scott Pilgrim after I saw Shaun of the Dead, but I really like that film as well. I think it's, again, I love the style and the, you know, the flair and the storytelling through a certain kind of editing that is very, just very Edgar Wright when you see it. It's like, you're like, oh, this is a very Edgar Wright moment. In this, and you know, this is kind of it's an auteur director thing, right? It kind of is one of the things that you get excited about when you go and see one of their films. And I think some of that style that I love was in this movie, and some of it was not so much in this movie. And my favorite scene that kind of brought all of those aspects in that I get excited about would have to be the scene on the dance floor. Which was just such a brilliantly choreographed and cut scene. And that kind of, you know, got me really excited because it's kind of early on in the movie. But I feel like that's kind of was like the best moment of stuff that I get excited about in the film. And it kind of slipped a bit for me from there.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
I
guess
it became a different kind of stylism that I feel, you know, was maybe a little bit more experimental for him.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly doesn't have that, like, it has the fast editing, it has the musical kind of play with the visuals and everything. Mm. And occasionally there are moments where, like, the movements and the footfalls fall in line to the beat or, you know, a character will do something that you sort of go, oh, that's very much in line with the music. But then there's a lot of it that is kind of, it's still like, I look at it and think, this is a film about a clever filmmaker who occasionally is maybe showing off how clever he is. not that I think that's necessarily a bad thing, but I do think that there are times, like some of the other ones, like I think you put it really nicely, Pete, when you said it's about telling a story through a particular style of editing. And I don't think this one does as much of that. Maybe it's a bit more mature. Who knows?
Well, it's always nice to experiment and try new things.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? I reckon we should experiment and try a new thing.
Yes.
By maybe you giving us a little bit of
the synopsis. Yes.
Yeah.
You're going to play us some music.
I am. We're going to get some lovely background music going right now.
Here we go. An aspiring fashion designer is mysteriously able to enter the 1960s, where she encounters a dazzling wannabe singer. However, the glamour is not all it appears to be, and the dreams of the past start to crack and splinter into something far darker.
Very nice.
That's all I got.
No, that's okay. The best part is I have no control over the audio at all. Cool. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, well, it is.
Yeah, I'll just fade it out nicely like that. There we go. Yay. Okay. What did we think of Anya Taylor-Joy?
Oh, my God. I can't get over her. I just can't. I'm like, how is somebody so stunning exists? Like,
it's revolting, isn't it? I hate her so much.
Yeah, it kind of is. It really kind of is. She's talented. She can sing. And she's gorgeous. Like, what's left for the rest of us?
I did have that moment of going, hang on, she can sing too? What the fuck? Jesus Christ.
I know.
And yes, who would want to get over her? Anyway, but, yeah, I thought that she plays a very, very interesting character in this one. But I guess, the lead character is probably a very different, but it's a different reflection. And I love that the reflection is a motif that is used throughout the whole thing. But Eloise, played by Thomas McKenzie, is our lead character, our jump on board character.
Our protagonist.
Yes, that's the word I want. Thank you so much.
Comes the year 12 English.
A jump on board character is a fantastic way to say protagonist.
Yes, isn't it? I like a good jump on
board
character.
Very concise. Much more concise.
Why say protagonist when if you can say jump on board character? Anyway, I didn't realize that she's actually New Zealandish.
New Zealand-ish?
Yes. Yeah. Not entirely.
Oh, okay. Is that what we call them now?
I don't know. I'm old. That's what we used to call them. She's a New Zealander. She's a Kiwi.
Kiwi.
Yes. And I had no idea, because when we first saw her in Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
And in that one, certainly didn't pick up in any Kiwi accent, Kiwi-esque. I thought she was fascinating.
She's got a voice that you'll either like or hate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pete, where are you at with her?
As an actor, neutral. I think. You know, she did a lovely job as a character. Cold, clammy.
Yeah.
I mean, interesting. Okay, look, I think I have to reveal my issues with this if we're going to like start talking about characters and stuff.
Yeah, go for it.
Let's get stuck.
I liked things about this movie, but I don't think I liked this movie. And one of the reasons I don't think I like this movie is that it just felt so tropey, and it feels weird for a male director to be telling a story of female horror in this way. Like, it feels very, and this for me, I said that you've got that kind of a little bit of Edgar Wright style and a little bit of something else. This feels to me like Edgar Wright's study in horror. So, you know, you're seeing a lot of kind of very Hitchcockian influences, both in the character design and in some of the more stylized horror scenes later on. And it just, it felt really, to me, like this whole story of this kind of meek, fragile female character with mental health background in the family, going to the big city and getting lost and overwhelmed in the experience, just felt really tropey. And then the flip side of that, the mirror side of that story about the beautiful woman wanting to make it big in the big city and then being taken advantage of by a man, also just felt really tropey. So it was,
yeah, very much a man's perspective on a woman's story.
Yeah. Even a man's perspective on evil male characters. Like, it was, so I think by the end I was like, this is very stylistic and nice, but God, I really struggled to enjoy the experience of watching the film. So when I talk about the characters now, it gets coloured by that opinion that I have developed.
I mean, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so absolutely fair.
Eloise is that I found the portrayal of the character a little bit of an irrit, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it does suffer from the that classic meme of, like, tell us a man wrote this story without telling us that a man wrote the story, you know? Like,
she walked meekly into the room meekly with her big, big eyes and her
And her heaving bosom and all that kind of garbage. I mean, there wasn't a lot of depth to Eloise, which I felt was kind of sad. There really wasn't anything fleshed out in her grandmother, who was also a part of the story. There was absolutely zero told about the mother besides her having committed suicide. All of the other girls that Eloise meets at her fashion school are all completely vapid and void of personality. And it seems to be that, like, the men in the film who are antagonists for the women are all just playing one note, and it's, we're predators. There was no other motivations or justifications for anything that they did. They're just like, they were there as predators and nothing else.
Yeah, it's you make a really good point. Like, I've been watching a lot of The Morning Show lately, and I've mentioned it many times. I just finished season two. There is this whole thing in there about all of the characters, even if they are predators, even if they are complete scumbags, there is something about them that you go, okay, well, there's still a human being there. There is an understanding of why they may do what they do. There is, you know, different facets. This one, for a thing that is all about reflections and refraction and stuff like that, is surprisingly lacking in facets.
Very well put. Yes.
I agree. I think Eloise, whilst being like, I like Thomas and Mackenzie, but the character's got nothing.
She was going on. So hard to protagonize with, Quinny. Like, she was hard to get on board with as a character. I felt the film was very slow to get going, and even like the one male friend that she does make in the movie was set up to seem predatorial in the beginning as well. So it's just like nobody around her ever was a comfort or a confidant or any kind of friend. Everybody was, you know, other. So... yeah, it was kind of weird to, like, horribly, empathize with her.
You've got that horribly stereotypical, you know, evil girl character as well, who exists to do nothing.
Oh, the bitchy girl. Meter. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because girls are either meek or bitches.
Yeah. Into drugs, and she's a badass, but at the same time she doesn't care. But at the same time she's, like, naming all of the food in the fridge, and was like, really? I like that you've given slightly more facets to the bad chick than you have the lead.
But yeah, my overall impression was that everything is very surface level, which is why I kind of feel like this is Edgar Wright's study of horror, because he's playing with the pieces of a horror film, but it doesn't seem like a lot of thought has gone into any more than each of those pieces being a piece of the horror film and the plot and that particular stereotype. Now, whether that's a conscious choice and whether he is riffing on that very Hitchcock stereotype of a certain kind of woman and a certain kind of horror, maybe, but I can watch Psycho for that.
Yeah. For me, if that was the intention, I would have liked to have been more obvious, because if you're not, you know, pointing out this kind of trope stereotype with a big red arrow, then it's going to fly over a lot of people's heads and we're just going to take it at face value, like we do for everybody in this film. It's just a face value.
The one kind of positive male in there that, you know, is the boyfriend character or whatever. I mean, even he, what a fucking non-event of a character he is. I wanted to try and get on board with him, but like, he is winsome. He's just like, I just thought you might like to go out and have a drink sometime, maybe. I don't know. And you're like, dude. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
There's a lot of talk about Edgar Wright and being a style over substance director, you know, that his style is so clear that sometimes it's bigger than the films that he's trying to make.
Right.
You know, that...
I wouldn't say that that's a rule for Edgar Wright films necessarily.
No, but it has been a criticism that has been leveled at him. I'm not saying that they are all the case, but people have said, hey, your fingerprints are all over this, to the point where something like Ant-Man, you know, which he was working on for however long before he jumped ship on it, people still said, well, it feels like an Edgar Wright film, even though Peyton Reed was the director that actually finished it.
And I don't feel that that's actually a negative thing to say to an author director. No. Like, an Edgar Wright film should feel like an Edgar Wright film, the way a Hitchcock film feels like a Hitchcock film, you know, and the Nolan film feels like a Nolan film, if you like that kind of thing, I guess. I don't necessarily feel like that's a negative thing to say about a director like Edgar Wright. Not every Hitchcock film was a great film. Sometimes a Hitchcock film is Hitchcock studying the genre to make his next film, and that just kind of feels like what that this is for me.
Yeah, and I mean,
I don't think that it's that bad.
Like, yeah, filmmaking is a type of art.
Yeah.
Filmmaking is a type of art, and it's not necessarily its only purpose is to entertain people. It can be there as, you know, a study of process, and, you know, that's what comes out at the end. And filmmakers are just able to market it and profit from it, and that's fine. It's our job as people that, you know, consume it to critique it, and, yeah, that's what we're doing. And that's what he fully expects from putting work out there, is that it's going to get critiqued. And I don't think necessarily that his style being attributed to a range of films is necessarily a negative thing, when what is talked about is usually like positive and enjoyment of that style.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And
like, I think there was a lot of the horror stuff that was successful in this film.
Yes.
I had a couple of jumps, and usually you don't get a jump out of me because you can see them a mile off, you know, in the way that shots are set up and music is used. But he kind of did like a couple of double fake outs that, like, I didn't quite catch when the actual fright was going to be, and he got me.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a study in horror, I think it's a successful study in horror. It's just not a very good study in character or storytelling, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. The horror aspects I did enjoy. Once it finally kicked in, and I'm like, oh, hey. hang on, oh, this is getting a little bit creepy. It was fantastic. Like, psychologically, yes, it was very good. I loved, like, the use of the mirrors and that kind of thing. But also, I think there was, like, a scene where Anya's character, Sandy, was, like, trying to escape a room, and she's going down a hallway, and it just felt like it was never ending. And I'm like, oh, this is like some good nightmare fuel. Like, I've had dreams like this where, like, you can't get out. And then to have that kind of like come into Ellie's world where she, you know, she thinks she's waking from a nightmare, but she's right back in it again, and that kind of stuff, like, was feeling a bit Inception-y. And I think that high tension and anxiety driving kind of horror, like, yeah, it was a good outcome from this movie. I think I even warned Pete. I said, Pete, you need to watch this movie, but be warned, it is high anxiety tension horror.
Prepare yourself.
Yeah.
And it's certainly built, you know, it sort of starts off at a fairly, you know, gentle kind of pace. And by the end of it, it is barreling along at a pace that you are like going, oh shit, right, okay,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Which I think is a very, very sort of enjoyable, but at the same time, as you say, tension building, which like by the end of it you want it to let you go. But yeah, look, I think there's so much about the characters not necessarily having enough going on that then undercuts a lot of that. Because... You go.
No, I agree with you. It, no matter how much I was enjoying those horror elements, I kept getting taken out of it by my annoyance at the stereotypical nature of the characters. And it really, like, that is a little bit irritating because there was, you know, so much about that horror, like, it would have been much more scary for me if there wasn't an intellectual part of my brain going, oh, but this is, you know, irritating that, and particularly that a male director is using these very real and particular elements of existing in the world as a woman and the natural horror that can come from that. It just felt, it didn't, like, I just,
yeah, it's like, hey, right. Edgar, some of this is daily life for women and not that scary.
Yes, but also, like, if you're going to kind of riff on it, then can you do it in a slightly less stereotypical,
like, yeah,
manner? Let's talk about the real horror. And I just was getting so annoyed by that stuff that even it was even kicking me out of the horror elements that I actually thought were doing really well, and otherwise would have enjoyed.
Yeah, there were elements in the horror stuff that I also thought the more that he kind of showed of the monsters, as it were, the less scary they became. And there comes a point where you're kind of like, it's a dude with some bad makeup on.
Well, it got a little bit Buffy-esque at one point there.
There were a couple of moments in there I was like, okay, right. I mean, I think the idea of it is good, but then, you know, sometimes showing it is too much.
I mean, vagueness and hiding your hand are definitely big pointers of, you know, trying to keep the hype up in a horror film. It just kind of felt a little paint by numbers that, you know, every minute was incrementally ratcheting up in the tension and action.
Yeah, and I'm extraordinarily glad to be talking about it with two women because, like, as a guy watching it, there is a kind of feeling of like, oh wow, this is horror and this is unpleasant and this is what women go through and everything. But to hear that for you guys, it kind of doesn't necessarily ring true, or it's not enough, like. Or that it's tropey as opposed to realistic.
I think more that it's being fetishized as a horror film, yes, rather than being a day-to-day life occurrence for some women
that's exactly
our problem with it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's that it just feels so old-fashioned. And I know I keep bringing up Hitchcock, but that
oh, but I mean, he was a classic misogynist. like
is Hitchcock. And yeah, exactly. When you think about Hitchcock, like, he was not a nice director to work with women.
No.
And you know, that stylized, you know, murder of the young, beautiful, slim, delicate woman as she screams. It just feels like something well out of the 60s. And again, then it makes me question if that was a choice that he was making it to style it exactly like something that you would have watched in the 60s. But it just feels,
again, doesn't feel obvious enough.
Interesting.
So that, yes, it you'll hit the nail on the head there, I think.
Yeah, and thank you, because this is helping me understand it a lot better, but also helping me kind of put a little thing in my brain that says why this didn't work, and maybe why it didn't work particularly as well for me as I wanted it to, because I was super fucking keen for this. I love me some Edgar Wright. I love his films, and I love his way of editing and everything, but there comes a point where you kind of like, still, it's not working for me. There's something that's not quite gelling, and thank you, you're really helping me kind of put that together. But also,
put your feminist cap on.
Well, the thing is,
from the feminist perspective.
I was watching it from a feminist perspective, and I think Karina's made a really good point there. Is like, it was still very male gazey.
Yeah.
Like, each of the characters, at one point there's a shot where Thomason, you know, takes her jumper off or something and walks straight towards the camera. And I was like, that was weirdly more sexual than it needed to be. Like, for somebody who is as young as she's portrayed to be, and like, and I know that there is a, like, throughout the whole thing, there is a sort of a through line of sexuality and exploring that, and, you know, her exploring that through these dreams and everything. But yeah, there were a bunch of, like, this feels tropey is one way to put it, but also fetishistic is a great way of saying it. And I think you fucking nailed that, Jill, but you don't need me to tell you that, because Peter just did.
It's also the kind of weird old-fashioned trope where, when it comes to women, sexuality is bad and will, you know, take you to a bad place and get you a bit murdery in one way or the other. And I'm talking around this because I don't want to spoil any of the story, because it does unfold in a way that kind of builds up this stuff, and I don't really want to reveal any of the way that it unfolds in the mirror world, except that it really plays into that idea that if you're a woman and if you own your sexuality, then you're going down. And that's, again, irritating. And then when you look at, like, Eloise, the flip side of that, and her kind of fear of exploring not even sexuality, but you know, anything that might be a little bit against the rules, or, you know, adventurous, and like, she's a very kind of meek and timid character at the beginning. So that seemed like a virtue for a female character. And then, you know, the character that isn't like that, well, she's just the bitchy girl who's awful. Just all of those layers, I'm like, oh god, did we make this in the 80s? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, she was set up as very naive, and virtuous is a very good word for it as well.
Yeah,
it is, because it's like, oh, we're going to set up this virginal character to have, like, her sexual exploration through a slightly older woman, but also somebody that's extremely sexy and desired. And it's just kind of, that is a bit gross.
And fetishized and fought over by men, and then, you know, completely lied to and you know, broken. And it's like, there has got to be another way of exploring that story. And I think, having her so innocent, but also tied to the mystical, the supernatural stuff, there's, like, they're trying to layer her with a lot, but it doesn't stick because she seems so kind of just ingenue-ish, which is like New Zealandish.
Yeah, I did quite enjoy that, you know, she drew her inspiration from the dream world and channeled it into her art and into her design. And then also, like, explored who she was as a person through what she saw in Sandy's eyes. Because she has come from, like, a very small country town and hasn't had that opportunity to find out who she is. It could have been so much worse if they made her more promiscuous, I think, like Eloise's character. So I'm glad they didn't go down that route. Like, at the same time, it just nothing quite felt cohesive with the character development.
Yeah. I think we should probably look at rating this because I realize that we've kind of been talking about it a lot, and I would like to get into a spoilery bit so we could perhaps have another go at really pulling this apart. I guess we will rate, but also I kind of want to know, do you think this is something that people should watch?
I mean, I'm not going to tell people to not watch it. Like, I didn't dislike it so much or think it was extremely problematic that people should avoid it. It was still, you know, entertaining. And I mean, the all of the elements that we discussed, I think it's still important for people to be able to see that kind of stuff and understand, well, yeah, that this is why it wasn't successful in its storytelling aspect. But I mean, yeah, like Amy said, stylistically, beautiful. Yeah, amazing. I loved the costume and the sets. The 60s stuff was incredible. Yeah, the acting was good. Yeah, it was just, thematically problematic.
Yes. Okay. Okay, Kangaroo started us off. He's given us the 77.
Oh, nice. He's just come out of the movie.
Yeah, I know. He's just finished watching it. So he's got the hottest review of all. Pete, what have you got numerically for me?
You know, I think I'm going to be a little bit harsh on this one because it's Edgar Wright and he can handle it, right? I'm gonna give it 60 for the 60s. Ooh. That's 60 for style and minus 40 for issues that we have just discussed.
And minus several million for bad. Don't worry. I always remember it's a Hitchhiker's Guide joke. Anyway. Oh, God, the credits are still rolling. Okay, so 60 from you. Okay, Jill.
I am probably going to go, I'm not going to say 69 because it's not nice. I'm going to say 68.
68, right.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it for its horror elements and its style. But, yeah, again, I didn't come out of the movie going, whoa, that was amazing. So, yeah, it's dropped down. And, it was so slow to start. I'm like, oh, where is this going? God, this girl's boring. And it wasn't until we started to see some dark themes in the 60s mirror world that I was like, oh, okay, now I'm getting a little bit more out of this. But, yeah, nice. Didn't quite get there.
Okay. I'm going to go 70 because I thought, I loved the style. Love the look, love the choice of music. I mean, music is such a huge part of this film. Loved the color palette, loved the way that the camera moved, loved the design. I like the look of Soho. I like you know, the 60s Soho, you know, 2020s Soho. The whole thing feels like it's just classy and cool and everything like that, but it's populated by a bunch of weird cutouts. And that's disappointing because if there's one thing that I used to think that Edgar Wright was really good at, it was character sort of not vignettes, but knowing how to pull character out of very little. But right. Then again, maybe that's just the actors that he's worked with or something. I don't know. It may just be that this was not his strong suit. So Yeah.
Give it another crack.
I don't think it's necessarily not his strong suit, you know.
Give it another go.
Yeah, he's looking at how to do some different things, and this was his experiment in this kind of different thing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to go to a clip and then we're going to come back and have a bit of a chat about this whole thing in full spoilery detail. So, of course, if you would like to watch the film and not know what happens at the end, then now's probably a time to go and make the dinner or something.
Well, hello there.
The bartender said I should get to know the handsome fella standing next to Cilla Black.
You should. And you are?
The next Cilla Black.
Are you now? Well, you know, she started out as a co-check girl.
You willing to work your way up?
Of course.
What can I get you to drink?
It's Sandy. And I'd love a Vespa.
James, we'd love a Vespa.
So what do you do, Sandy?
Well, I sing, of course.
How's your dancing?
Care for a demonstration?
Yeah. Oh no. Oh, I thought we'd lost Peter entirely.
Oh God, am I gone?
No.
Oh, you're upside down. Oh no, you're back. Oh,
okay.
You're okay.
I was just trying to turn off my message notifications because they were a bit distracting on the one phone screen that I'm also trying to talk to you guys on.
Okay. Well done. You are getting through this, and it is very, very impressive. Right. Okay. Well, let's have a chat about this whole business in terms of spoilers.
Yeah.
It's a tough one because I feel very uncomfortable about spoiling it. But
yeah, look, what we do, guys, so. If you don't want to know the nitty gritty of it, I would bail now. And like,
yeah.
I'm going to give you a 5. And a 4, a 3, a 2, a 1. What did we think? When did you guys ping that the old lady downstairs was Sandy?
I'm going to be honest. I didn't pick it until the beginning of the last scene where you actually find out and she's just being creepy as fuck.
Okay.
When she goes in to get her stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I may have just kind of, I don't know. I think it was probably roughly when they were like, oh no, when the old guy was revealed to not be Jack at all, but be Lindsay. I was like, then you kind of go, okay, well, who's left? who's a character that's been developed?
Yeah, it's. You know, Jack didn't kill Sandy, Alex killed Sandy. And you're like, right, so Alex is still around somewhere. And then that was kind of, you know, it falls into place there. I feel like if you think you picked it before that, like, I don't know what other crumbs you were picking up, because I think that was like the main one to.
Well, when she spoke to Mrs. Collins and said, you know, who used to live upstairs, something twinged. Like, I didn't pick that she was Sandy because I figured, no, Sandy's dead. Like, this is a dead person. But something twinged. And, like, I thought, this woman has to know something. Not letting something on. But, yeah, it wasn't until I saw the envelope with the Alexandra Collins and I'm like, oh, shit! Oh, why didn't I see this before? God damn.
Yeah. I know that she's something shady when she's like, oh, well, everyone's been murdered in every room in London. I'm like, that was a good way to not answer the question. You could have just said
yes. Yeah, exactly.
No. Yeah. Like, if it'd been like a juicy murder, she would have loved to gossip about it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a part of me that goes, do you cast Diana Rigg as just a, you know, nice, kindly old lady from downstairs? No, you fucking don't. like, Diana Rigg, in recent years at least, since Game of Thrones, has proven herself to be extraordinary at being a hard-ass bitch.
Yeah.
And I've enjoyed that. She is a great loss. Did that work? Like, did the twist work for you?
I don't know, to be honest. Like, again, with the trope of like, oh, she was, you know, dogged by every man in the city, therefore she lashed out and murdered every single one of them. I'm like, wow, that was what came of her, you know, like the men drove her to become a murderer.
And like, surely Jack was noticing, like, before she killed 100 of them. Like, why was,
or was
like,
Jack
oh,
the
where's
first?
My money?
Yeah. So this is the thing I'm still trying to work out, whether, you know, Jack was the first one that she murdered, and then she just went through everybody that had been ever one of her customers, or the other way around. But also, it does then, my little weird spidey sense was kind of going, hang on, so there's a little thing there saying you can't be a victim, like, or if you are a victim, it will turn you into a monster. And that started to make me think, I'm not overly comfortable with this narrative from a feminist perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't happy with the fact that she decided she'd just end her life in a house fire after the whole hard life that she lived through. And I don't really appreciate that there was no camaraderie between women in this movie either. Mm. Like, you would think with Ellie, like, living her, Sandy's whole old life, there would be some sort of compassion for what she went through. And you would also think that, you know, of all of the hardship that Sandy had lived through, she would find solace and, you know, camaraderie in another woman, because men were against her whole life. But there was none of that. She's like, oh, no, I'm going to murder you on the stairs, and because you found out my secret now. And I was like, she's lived this long with, like, no one discovering the secret. Like, wouldn't she be a little bit more, oh, well, you know, you've seen my whole life. Like, you know what I went through. You understand why I did this, right? And Ellie would have been, yeah, totally. I'm just going to get my stuff and go home, though.
Yeah.
But also, she didn't really know that Ellie had seen her whole life. Like, that was the other thing. That, there was some pieces missing, I think, at the end. Mm. But what bugged me was that kind of, you know, oh, femme fatale, she's murdered all of the men again. Just so tropey. Yep. You know, she was taken advantage of, and then she was a victim, and then that just turned, like Quinny said, just turned her into a monster, and this is what she's done. And at some point I feel like you were supposed to, like, feel bad for the men monster gods.
Oh, yeah, you were.
Yes, because help they're me. All like, oh, help me. Me. I'm like, no.
Put your fucking spiritual dick away and maybe we'll think about it. But don't fucking stand around with your ghost wang out.
No, we're not going to avenge your spirits. Get the fuck out of here. You've got what you deserve.
Yeah.
Also, like, Emily's, like, recovered from whatever drug she was given very quickly after being in that room.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
like, at one second she couldn't, like, drag herself up the stairs, and the next second she's just totally fine.
Yeah, what was she poisoned with? Like, if it was nice and she had no chance, like, she should be dead. Like, what has old Lady Sandy got that, you know, she poisoned her with?
I did have issues, and this is the dumbest thing to have issues with. I really didn't like Eloise's makeup for the last, like,
oh my god, the Halloween makeup where, like, it was that horrible panda eye thing.
Well, the horrible panda eyes, but then, like, what, a day later or something like that, she suddenly decided that she's now going to get rid of most of it but leave a very fashionable goth look, black eye kind of thing. And I was like, fuck off. Just, there's a part of me that really just didn't gel with that. And I was like, either you've washed your face or you haven't.
But you know, Quinny, that whenever women come into their power, they automatically have a smoky eye?
Oh, shit. Fuck. I'd hereby like to apologize to any woman who's ever had a smoky eye near me. I had no idea that you were in your power, and my apologies if I cut you off in traffic. You're right. The tropiness is the real thing, isn't it? Like, it occasionally just gets lazy.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, come on. which is disappointing.
But
it's
built on a lazy foundation is the problem.
Mm.
Like the entire story and the construction of the characters right down to the twist at the end is a lazy foundation. It's a very stereotypical horror movie, woman screaming, stab.
I like Predakanga's take on, like, his interpretation was very much like a psychosis kind of thriller type of thing. And I would have liked that to actually have been explored more because they said her mother had, you know, committed suicide. And I'm like, okay, well, did her mother have the same power that she's got in being able to visualize ghosts? You know, how about we just like explore that angle of horror in like, oh, okay, well, we've got someone that, you know, whenever she goes to sleep or, you know, if there's a particularly riled up spirit, she'll like move into their world and experiences and stuff. And like, let's look at that version of like, you know, psycho horror and thriller rather than like, oh, here's a woman that was like hard done by like a lot of men and she murdered them all.
I also feel like as an exploration of somebody falling into psychosis, it would have only worked if the stuff that she was seeing didn't end up being true.
Like, yeah.
That would then have worked. But the reveal at the end was that everything that she saw was not, in fact, psychosis. It was some kind of psychic, you know, link to the past. And so then it becomes like a supernatural thing and not an exploration of mental health. And even as an exploration of mental health, frankly, it would have been offensive and stereotypical.
So, yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah, it could have been a lot more interesting if it had been kind of more a serious take on somebody who, yeah, had mental health issues that was, you know, really not coping. Because, I mean, I guess that's always one of the things that it's easy or more interesting to explore is whether or not, you know, the monsters in your head are better or worse than the ones that may be real. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the excellent mirror work?
Oh, my God. Hell. Oh, I loved the mirror stuff. Yeah.
Actually,
mirror work is hard.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah.
And they made it look easy, which is kind of annoying because then you're like, oh, no, but people won't realize how hard it was.
Yeah. And it's like how much of it was actually mirrors and how much of it was like, maybe it's just like a false wall and they're shooting like the same thing on two sides of a wall with a cutout. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of work for the VFX apartment anyway.
I do still think like that dance sequence is one of the most astonishing pieces of filmmaking in this whole thing. Like the shift between Anya Taylor-Joy and Eloise constantly backwards and forwards. But there was a little part of me that was watching it as filmmaking, not storytelling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a lovely little study. And because most of that was actually done in camera and they're just switching around behind camera, which like amazing work for everybody on camera, particularly Matt Smith looking just so relaxed, you know, in his moment in the dance when, you know, centimetres away from what we can see, you've got two different actors like switching out the dance moves with him is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Great choreography of the dance and the camera moves all together.
Yeah.
But, yes, I definitely watched that with my nerdy film student hat on, not just my enjoyment of this film hat on. You can watch it any other way.
Yeah. I was looking to try and find a clip of that dance sequence, but obviously it's the kind of stuff that's a little bit hard to find. And unfortunately, one of the other dance sequences kept on popping up because the internet is full of scum. And it is the wind-up doll dance.
Oh, yeah.
And I think just looking at the thumbnail for it, I recognize what one of the thing that kind of keyed me into the idea that this was a male trying to tell a woman's story, as you said, is that whilst it's a dance number that is meant to be titillating for the audience, it shouldn't necessarily be titillating for the viewing audience of the film. And
yeah.
I was looking at it the way it was shot and everything. I was like, this is so fucking male gazey.
Yeah. Like, even though we're looking at it through Eloise's eyes because she's there in the room watching this, there was not a moment of it where you felt any kind of discomfort besides seeing the reaction on her face and wanting to leave the room.
Yeah.
There was nothing that you as the viewer felt uncomfortable with.
I'm but then always... also,
Eloise is being judgy as fuck about that in that moment as well, which is, which is, you know, just well, sort of like I feel like that message.
Yeah, at that moment she had a lot of expectations on what she was seeing from Sandy. Like, she thought, oh, I've discovered this woman that's, like, going to be, like, this next amazing singer. And then to see her have that fall from grace, I feel like that was kind of a disappointing moment for her. But it should have been like a realization on, you know, poor Sandy's exploitation.
So. But the fact that the fall from grace was, you know, Sandy dancing sexy is just like another one of these, you know, it's bad for women to display their sexuality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
evil.
Yeah. And
yeah,
and...
I know. It's hard because, like, there's nothing in this scene that shows a woman in control or in power. So, yeah, it's definitely a male gaze of, hey, look at these sexy women. None of them have any agency.
I just feel like that's often the choice of male storytellers to show the woman is losing her agency.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
I will always remember.
Make her be a stripper. Make her, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
I will always remember.
The most male-gazy way you can possibly tell the story of a woman losing her agency.
Yeah. Yeah. Is becoming a paid sex worker.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I always go back to, whatchamacallit, Harley Quinn, the Emancipation of Harley Quinn, the Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
That there is a sequence in that which is about a woman losing her agency, but it is shot in such a way that it is completely non-sexualized. Like, I will forever remember that as being a moment of showing somebody being humiliated and everything and it not having a sexual moment in there.
Mm.
And if you want to do that, there are ways of doing it that aren't as leery as this.
Yeah.
Leery is a very good word to describe it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and then there's this sequence where she runs through the back of the thing and there's just drugs and sex acts and stuff happening here, there and everywhere. And it just, yeah, every single one of them felt really icky but not the way that I think they're intended to.
Yeah,
it was kind of like demonizing the whole industry rather than the thing that's happening to Sandy. You know, it's not demonizing that the acts of what Jack is doing to her, but the whole debauchery.
All of these women have fallen from grace.
Yeah,
all of these women.
And
have,
like, oh, if you have sex for money, if you do drugs, like if you drink and you smoke, like all of this debauched lifestyle, like you're a bad person.
Yeah, and this is going to lead to death, because I'm pretty sure there was at least one moment in there where there's people having, you know, drugs in one corner, sex in another corner, and then somebody who looks like they've either passed out or died. And it was kind of like, look at the moral falling out here, you know? Mm. And it's, yeah, about as subtle as a brick to the head. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a visually interesting film.
Yeah, it's pretty,
it's visually amazing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's I think somebody mentioned Promising Young Women before as a study of something with a similar tone that I guess it's told by a woman. And I feel like that might be kind of a decent example. Because that I found that film really upsetting, partly because I expected it to go in a very different direction to where it ended up going. Okay. But it has some, like, visual kind of parallels, particularly between the look and the design of the main characters and that kind of thing. But it definitely goes in a completely different direction that makes you feel icky for a whole different reason. But in terms of agency of the key characters, does a significantly better job.
Yeah. And now I kind of want to go and watch that.
I'm happy about that, Quinny. I haven't talked to anyone about it yet. I don't know anyone else who's watched it already.
I still haven't seen it yet. I've been seeing it there, like on the streaming service. I just haven't watched it yet.
Mm. I'm very keen to check it out because I've seen so many great reviews about it. And, yeah, I really want to check it out. Also, I think there should be more stories told by women directors about these things because as we've seen here, getting a dude to do it doesn't necessarily work. So cool. Okay. I would love to tell you what we're doing on Friday, but I'm not entirely sure.
Are we doing anything on Friday?
I was supposed to be here on Friday, but I will not be here on Friday.
Have you got things on? You're busy, aren't you?
I've got things on, yeah. So if you guys wanted to talk about Foundation on Friday, go for it.
might not be a bad idea. But you're not around on Friday, are you, Quinny? So it might be me talking about Foundation to the chat on my own.
I think Dion will be back on Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am very keen to check out and talk about Foundation because I've now finished watching it and I have many, many, many thoughts, but we will.
I wish you guys had told me that Lee Pace was in it and I'd be watching it already.
Oh, shit, sorry.
I mean,
you didn't tell me on Old Man Sci-Fi. Like, that was like, ew. But you could have had freaking Lee Pace in it.
Lee Pace getting around in a
Pace. I'm not sure that you necessarily are going to want to commit to the style of sci-fi that it is just for the amount of Lee Pace that you get, but there's quite a bit that you get.
Okay. I might try it. I'll watch one episode and see if it's okay.
Yeah, there is an episode that is so much Lee Pace. It's like Lee Pace just getting around in a loincloth and you're like, oh, okay. and suddenly Jill's like, well.
Look, it's either that or I'll just watch Pushing Daisies for like the millionth time.
Yeah, that was one of my most recent lockdown
it's just so whole awesome.
Series binges. I kind of sandwiched like Pushing Daisies with Halt and Catch Fire and Poldark.
Oh, wow. What a mixed bag.
That's a lot. I don't know.
That was only so much in there. Guys.
Well, Missy's asking the question, when is the December schedule out? When we've done it.
It's coming. It's coming. We're trying really hard to, like, actually work out who's available when so we can do it.
December is the toughest month for trying to work things out. Yeah, chop, chop. Yes, okay, fine.
we do have lives, you know.
We do. I'm hoping to go back to Tasmania at some point in time. At the moment, with Omicron and Unicron and all of the other crons.
That's the first thing I fucking thought of when I heard about this Omicron variant. I'm like, the Unicron?
Yeah. Yes.
The Transformer?
Yes. Okay. Yes, and yes, Missy, we know it's tomorrow.
December is tomorrow. Spent 3 months in lockdown again.
Yeah, I am now currently terrified that they're going to lock down the fucking the whole thing to Tasmania again because they're apparently now said that the what was a 15th of December we're definitely opening is now we'll maybe open. Mm. I'm like, fuck.
I know.
And there's Christmas parties, there's events, there is all that kind of stuff. So please be patient with us. We will get a schedule out and there is a bunch of stuff. I mean, for a start, there's that spider film, you know, that is coming out
in like...
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's coming out in 16 days.
I know that I've definitely got tickets to go see it on the 16th.
We need to do the ring around and find out if we can get some earlier tickets.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I mean, we will also be talking about Ghostbusters Afterlife at some point in time during this month because, well, we all went and done watched it.
Yes. And I want to talk about Hawkeye, and Dion wants to talk about Dune. And yeah, there's so much.
There's a heap of stuff. Plus, there's also the musical stuff that I know that you were wanting to have a look at some point.
Yeah, we'll get to that maybe the new year. I don't know.
Yeah, tune in for musicals at some point. There's lots of musical chats coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's good filler stuff when we're light on for new releases, but we're just being spammed with, like, new release stuff. Yeah.
Yes, look, there's going to be plenty. So, what? There's spoilers out for Spidey? I don't want spoilers.
It hasn't been released yet.
And if there is spoilers out for Spidey, I think they're bullshit because I don't think anyone.
Yeah, there's a lot of fake stuff going around, so yeah, just watch out.
Oh, and yes, Predakanga makes a very good point. Let's pour one out for Stephen Sondheim, who, you know, if you're going to do a special on musicals, you kind of have to mention him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very, very, I mean, I'd say sad, but he was 91 and has a body of work that is exceptional. So,
yeah,
you know what? More power to him. Right. Well, thank you, everybody. We will see you very, very shortly, sometime, probably Friday. Maybe. I don't know. We'll let you know. Keep an eye out.
By ear.
Absolutely we are. And we've enjoyed having you here, and we'll see you all again. I have been Quinny.
I've been Jill.
And I've been Peter.
Thanks for listening to the Periodic Table podcast. If you have comments, feedback, questions, or suggestions, email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. From our website, you can find our Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook links, as well as ways to donate to the show if you're feeling generous. And of course, you can join in the show live on Tuesday and Friday nights on our Twitch channel. Until next time, stay awesome!